Blog Talk Radio.
Darlings, it's Mummy, Sybil Brunchen, and here we are live, coming to you live from high atop the Chrysler Building in the heart of New York City, Manhattan, the revolving ballroom of the Café Berlin. We are broadcasting to you live on New Year's Eve, 2018. Can you believe it, darlings? It's so exciting. 2018. We're actually 20 years into the new millennium. Who would have thought? I remember when Y2K happened. Remember Y2K? And we always thought the world was going to end because our computer calendars and our analog and whatever interlog and pinch the log watches would crash or whatever. Oh my goodness. And here we are. We muddled through one decade and then another decade. We got through George Bush the Younger, and we got through all of the years with Obama fighting that Republican Congress. And now here we are, 2 years into Donald Trump's ongoing munch scream like night cut. I feel that the last 2 years have been Munch's scream painting, literally the scream painting. I think we're all on the highway of life screaming at the top of our lungs, but we're 2 years into it. We're closing in on the third decade of the new millennia, the new century and the new millennia, and we've survived. I'm here with my beloved, my brilliant, my wise beyond her years producer and patroness, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry. Gwendolyn, how are you tonight?
I'm really great. Looking forward to the new energy.
Yes, me too. Me too. Where I'm getting rid of old energy like dust bunnies under the sofa of life, and I'm sweeping them out. I'm going to dispose of them. I don't think I'm going to throw them in the trash. I think like hair combings, dust bunnies should be burned in an ashtray somewhere, and we should not let them fall into the wrong hands. And after all, let's be honest, some of dust bunnies are human hair probably, or hair of some sort. Anyway, we're going to do that. We're going to do a few things tonight. For those of you that are listening in and are brave enough to listen to us live, thank you, thank you, thank you for interrupting your plans. This is live. Our podcast is live tonight, and we're on, of course, at 8 Eastern Standard Time, 7 Central. We're being listened to simultaneously by people all around the world. So imagine, right now, our audience on this podcast, and this is Come Now, Don't Sulk, at part of the Here Be Monsters Network, which is on podcast radio, whatever, a blog talk radio. We are part of Gwendolyn's wonderful network, Here Be Monsters. But what I love is our demographics and our wonderful geeks in the sound room have said that we are being listened to right now simultaneously by people in all 24 time zones. And we have listeners from all around the world because that's how podcasts work now. People can listen to us in India, Australia, and even Akron, Ohio. Can you imagine? And so people are listening to us. Some people are still listening to us in the year 2018, and some people are listening to us in the year, they are in the year 2019. They have already experienced the new year, so they're already listening to us in the future. And I'm going to make some phone calls during our show and ask, what is happening tomorrow? I want to find out what is going to happen tomorrow by our nice friends in Turkey and elsewhere. So we're going to try and bend time. Can you imagine? Just like Captain Kirk on the Star Trek series. We're going to try and live in two separate dimensions simultaneously. For those of you that are still in 2018 and several time zones behind us, if we go far enough west, we will actually go back to 1918. Can you imagine? It's interesting how time works. If only Stephen Hawking were still alive to explain it all to us. I'm going to tell you, before I do anything, I want to acknowledge our sponsor, Our sponsor all this year during this wonderful experiment has been daughtersofisis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. That's daughtersofisis.com. That's all one word. Do hop on your laptops and check them out for their fine products. I know several of my friends bought presents from daughtersofisis.com for Christmas who they wanted experiences as opposed to possessions. I think we're getting into an age when people are more interested in experiences than in materialism. And so Daughters of Isis provides us with amazing fragrances and sensual experiences which expand our minds and our spirits and our consciousnesses. And before I go any farther, I want to ask Gwendolyn. Gwendolyn, do you have a fragrance that would be great for the 2019, something that we should look at and get to help welcome in this new year and the end of the decade? What do you think?
Well, I think that's easy. I would go with Quantum Shift, which is a citrus-based blend of our Ayurvedic collection, and it refreshes everything, and it helps you from the light body to the physical body to connecting to heaven and earth at all at once and bringing about brand new energy altogether. So there you go.
I love that prescription right there. The whole symptomology of it sounds wonderful, what it covers, what it does. And I also like that in the dead of winter, for those of us that are in the north, anything citrusy is lovely. Anything that reminds me of palm trees and oranges is fabulous. So I shall immediately get a bottle of it, especially for my travels to these colder climates. You know, when I'm up in Minnesota, I'm definitely going to want some of that. Thank you so much.
You're
and
very
should
welcome.
We get... And what's the fragrance with the dollar sign on it? Is it called money?
It is called money. Money, honey.
I think we all should get a bottle of that because I'm worried about the trickle-down theory that the president and the Republicans are still trying to sell us like snake oil. So I think that we should all get the fragrance from Daughters of Isis called Money. You can't miss it, folks. It's got a dollar sign on the label. And explain that one to us, please.
Well, it's very popular, and it has helped me out a few times, and it's something a lot of folks like to carry. What it is it's a very earthy but sweet also and light fragrance. It evokes a memory of the kitchen and grandmother in one way that it makes people at ease, and in another way, it's extremely attracting. It's one of those attraction kind of blends or fragrances. And it lightens things up in that vein, in feeling good and feeling fine about where you are, what you're doing, and also being attracted to opportunity at the same time. It's a good blend.
Excellent. I've actually sprayed some on the collar of my shirt when I go into these business meetings I've been going into so that it's actually behind my ears and at my pulse points there. And then I think you'll be pleased to know, because I've been in a hotel like 25 nights of every month, I spray some on my pillow before I go to bed. So I literally lay my face into a pillow that's got three or four spritzes of money on it. And it sets me right down into the nicest dreams. I feel so restful and so calm. And it's interesting you mentioned kitchen and nurturing and warmth and comfort. It does do that. That's funny. It's exactly what I do.
Well, you know, it's been the trick of Macy's and a few other, but even Bergdorf's have been known to use what they call aromatherapy. It's actually aromacology. But they'll use a vanilla blend to make you feel at ease, comfortable, to promote, point of sales. And what do they call that?
When you walk into the store. Yes, exactly. Yeah. When you walk into the store.
Yep.
You're not even aware of it. They started doing it quite a while ago, and they did it very subtly. They didn't want people to suddenly walk into a Bergdorf's or a Saks or whatever and say, oh, my God, I'm smelling vanilla cookies or anything. It's not that. It's very subtle. but it immediately sets you into a mood. And Estee Lauder is the one who famously sprayed her counter areas in the stores. When she first set up her Estee Lauder stores, she would spray her fragrances around her counters, not heavily so you felt like it had been spilled, but so that it simply puts you in a mood. And people thought she was crazy to do that, but no, she already knew that there was a whole psychological and spiritual and commercial presence there by doing that. Very interesting how aromatherapy, or as you say, is it aromacology?
It is. Aromacology.
Yes, aromacology is a powerful, powerful science. This is not fantasy guru, nonsense, folks. This is the real thing. Try, and you know what? I'm going to recommend a few things to do this year, and I'm going to recommend that we approach some new thinking and some new ideas and expanding our minds and our consciousnesses in different ways. Let's be curious this year. Let's not be so set in our ways. Let's be curious, and one thing we can do is we can start exploring the use of essential oils and herbal products that are around us in nature, that aren't all chemically produced by Dow and by DuPont, that are actually in our environments. And let's go to people and ask them about how we could change our lives, our psychology, our emotions, using things as easy as fragrances. It could be very exciting, I think.
It is.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah. It is. Yes, it is. Make living at it.
All righty. I am going to I know that we're going to try. People are going to try and call in. Our switchboards have already been they've already warned us that they may get clogged and people are listening in and calling in. So if we don't get your call tonight, it's not because we don't want to. It's because we're just being inundated by people who are listening in live at 8:00 Eastern Standard Time. Of course, we're going to be off the air at 9:00, long before you get ready to drop your confetti and your pants for New Year's Eve. So, or whatever you're going to, however way you're going to be celebrating, I would like to just tell everyone that you can find Mummy not only here on Blog Talk Radio on Come Now, Don't Sulk, here be Monsters Radio every Monday night at 8:00 going forward into the new year, thanks to the daughtersofisis.com and Gwendolyn. But you can also find me at SybilSez.com and SybilBrunchen.com. That's SybilSez.com and SybilBrunchen.com. And on the Lollipop Guild, that's on Facebook. You can find me on my home pages on Facebook. I have several pages. And I also am on Instagram and Twitter. I would like to say a special shout out and thank you to my wonderful mentor and guru, Steve Buscher, who has made SybilSez.com possible this year. I wouldn't have been able to do that without him. So I have Gwendolyn here on Blog Talk Radio, who's made that possible, and Steve Buscher has made my SybilSez.com website and blog center possible with constant care, constant designing. He's just been a genius at all of that. And I want to thank my great pal, Yuri Kushner, who lives in Europe now, but who has made SybilBrunchen.com possible. SybilBrunchen.com would not be possible without the genius of Yuri Kushner. So thank you both for being so wonderful to me this year and getting Sybil Brunchen out into the world. I also would like to mention that you're going to be finding less and less Sybil Brunchen on Facebook and more in the websites. I'm going to be posting links on Facebook to all those stories and those adventures and to my YouTube channel. So if you'd like to follow Sybil Brunchen and her wacky world, you will find her, but use Facebook as the billboard. Facebook will no longer be my home. It will be a billboard, and you follow those directions, and they're very simple. I think this is a very expanding thing also. Let's learn how to take our mouse or our finger on our pad laptop, or you can even do it on your smartphone. You can go to all these sites on your smartphone, but let's learn how to drag that little arrow to that jumble of letters and numbers that's called a link, right? Mummy's helping you now. And Mummy's as old as you, so if I can learn it, you can too. You drag your cursor, and it's not cursor as in you're cursing it, although some of you probably are, but your cursor goes to that link, and then it will light up, and you click on that link, and suddenly you're carried to the website or to the new site. You can follow a link to daughtersofisis.com. How exciting. You see, you don't have to type in those letters. You go to that in the address bar and click on it, and it takes you there instantly. This is like an internet Uber. You don't have to buy the car. You don't have to park the car. You don't have to gas up the car. You don't have to pay for the insurance of the car. You call up your Uber, which is your internet link. You click on it, and a nice man comes and carries you away to a nice new place. And you can do it geographically, or you can do it on the internet with links. It's so exciting. You know, our technology isn't always our enemy, darlings. Sometimes our technology is actually a mad scientist for good, not for bad. So let's try that, and you'll come visit Mummy and her different places and her stories. I am getting notes right now on my private message. I love this. I have been asked to do my absolutes for 2018, and I will do them right now. What was the stupidest quote of the year? People have said, what do you think the stupidest quote of the year is? Well, I could do 100 of them, and I could attribute 99 of them to one person who's orange, and you know who that is. Literally, we thought that George Bush the younger was the stupidest human being who ever lived. He is a combination of Stephen Hawking and Galileo and Mahatma Gandhi in one compared to the current president. So I'm going to say that the stupidest quote of all the stupid quotes this year is, drum roll please, smocking gun. Smocking gun. I will never forget that he tweeted smocking gun not once but twice in the same tweet. He is beyond an idiot. If we thought that Dan Quayle was stupid because he couldn't spell potatoes correctly, smocking gun goes down with Covfefe and whatever else. He's an idiot, and in Roman times, the Romans were intelligent enough to leave children like that on hillsides for wolves to carry off and raise or eat or both. Smocking gun. Strangest adventure. Mummy, what was your strangest adventure this year? For those of you following my Tourette's, and all my Tourette's are going to be moving to YouTube, thanks to Steve Fisher. My strangest adventure of many, many strange ones. Remember, I've been in 19 states in 4 months. 19 states in 4 months, traveling with George. The strangest adventure, I think, of all was the was Storybook Land in Aberdeen, South Dakota. I feel like I'm reading the Oscars right now. Then the envelope, please. Storybook Land, Aberdeen, South Dakota, where Frank Baum lived for a short time, the author of the Wizard of Oz series. They built this, and it was, if you remember, it was several acres and acres of land, landscaped elaborately with winding paths and a miniature railroad and a moat and a castle and everything. And they had devoted hundreds of fiberglass statues, sculptures, painted perfectly, maintained breathtakingly, immaculate. Not only were they not worn or weathered, they were not even soiled. They didn't even have dust on them. Outdoors, and they were tableaus of all, they started with fairy tales, Hans Christian Andersen and Grimm's brothers and all of that, but then they branched out into the Hanna and Barbera cartoon characters. They had Yogi Bear and Boo Boo Bear. They had Woody Woodpecker. And they were all laid out in different areas that were dedicated to different things. They built the three pigs' houses, all being fiberglass. The straw house was fiberglass. The wood house was fiberglass. But the brick house was literally brick. And as you remember, I took you all in there with my camera. We went inside, and I remember saying that it reminded me of Martha Stewart's prison cell in its grimness and sadness, and in the smell, which was distinctly of urine and pumpkin spice, which was a strange thing to experience. That was without doubt. It went on and on and on, Storybook Land, and it was just off season. It was just after school began. So you had this vast, vast amusement park of rides and things, and a whole separate Land of Oz adventure. You could go through all of the Land of Oz and everything, and the castle and all of that, everything. but unoccupied. So it was like a Twilight Zone episode. It was almost like I kept thinking Rod Serling was going to come out of little Jack Horner's house, or, you know, the old woman and the shoe or something. It was so weird. It was like being in a strange thing and no security whatsoever. So in other words, it was amazing that it was never defaced, or it was never damaged. High school kids didn't go there after they tipped over gravestones and deface storybook land. Aberdeen, South Dakota, very interesting. As I told you, I traveled to 19 states, some of which I walked into. There were cities that we were in, like Omaha, Sioux Falls, Fargo, Memphis, Grand Forks, that were on the borders of states. So some days when I was doing a tourette, I would simply cross the Mississippi River and be in a different state and walk you through that. So that was kind of interesting. I felt like the Gaylord Ravenal in Showboat. I felt like Gaylord. I was traveling up and down the Missouri and the Mississippi rivers for much of our adventures this year, and that was fun. What else? I want most charming spots. Interesting. Lumberjack Village in Hayward, Wisconsin, an entire village and an outdoor theater dedicated to log chopping and log rolling and climbing logs and everything, and country music. That was an adorable place, Lumberjack Village in Hayward, Wisconsin. The old market district of Omaha. Oh, my gosh. Omaha, a major city, had kept an entire section of their city intact. Instead of tearing it all down and replacing it with a god-awful Wells Fargo skyscraper, of which there are too many all around the country, and they all are identical, and they've all been dropped into the middle of charming cities that have torn down their Greenwich Villages, their versions of Greenwich Village. For some reason, Omaha kept their old market district right on the river, and it is block after block of antique 19th century buildings that are either already repurposed and being used by mom and pops, antique shops, all of that, or are being held to be used that way. There's no Wendy's in there. There's no Starbucks in there. It's not corporatized. It's all antique. The entire town of Rapid City, South Dakota. Oh, my God. And the Hotel Alex Johnson. I'm telling you, Rapid City, if you ever are in that part of South Dakota, run, do not walk, to Rapid City. The entire town is adorable, and not just because it was Christmas time. And, of course, when you're in Rapid City, you've got to go to Mount Rushmore. Mount Rushmore was my most surprising tourist attraction. It wasn't what I expected. I went, and not only was it fascinating, and the museum built there, and all of the grounds around it. This is in the winter, folks. This is in the winter when it, you know, it's not necessarily, you know, perfect resort weather, you know, state park or national park weather. It was still a dream come true. I wish I could have stayed there for more days. And then the whole area around Mount Rushmore and around Rapid City, fascinating. So many things to do, caverns to go climbing in, and other museums and other cultural spots and Native American things to do there. I'm telling you, so surprising. I'm so grateful that I went there, and not just because of North by Northwest and Hitchcock and Cary Grant. Other most charming spots. Franklin, Tennessee, priceless. A whole town, absolutely priceless. Stillwater, Minnesota, another town, stopped in time, priceless, full of mom and pop shops. These towns have not been destroyed by corporate America. They are still intact and have so much in them. Beale Street, here's just one block, three blocks. Beale Street in Memphis has nothing to do with the Beale Street movie that's being released. Beale Street, Memphis, go, run, do not walk. Unbelievably charming, quirky, quaint, eccentric, a little bit off, and a dream come true. All of its insanity is exactly what we want. We do not want Times Square by Giuliani. What we want is Beale Street today, the way they're making it, you know, the blues and B.B. King and all of that. Great. By the way, I want to congratulate the state of Tennessee. Tennessee, you know, there's all this prejudice about the red state thing and the hillbilly thing and blah, 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 blah. What state has an equal balance of rock and roll, blues, and country western? There's no state in this country that can claim that kind of success in those three different parts of our musical culture. America's musical culture, three of the big icons are blues, rock and roll, and country western, and they are all the bullseye of Tennessee. Tennessee, congratulations. I don't know how you do it, but that's something to be very proud of. What else am I going to – oh, most beautiful city. Well, I think all the cities that I've been to have been great in different ways. I have to say it's a mixed bag here. Denver and Philadelphia, as far as cities go, are quite beautiful. They're quite beautiful. The skylines are breathtaking. The architecture is astounding. But on the other hand, I do have to say that both cities have erased huge sections of their history so that they could put up the postmodern glass and steel and asymmetrical leaning towers and things. So they both win the George Jetson Futuristic City Awards, but at a price. They're nevertheless, they're very impressive. And if you haven't been to Philadelphia or Denver, or indeed, I'll add, Dallas, if you haven't been to Dallas or Houston in the last 20 years, you will not recognize it, because if it's prior to that, those cities looked very, very different. And in the last 20 years, the 90s, especially late 90s, all of those cities began to transform themselves into what people are expecting cities to be today, just as the Hudson rail yards are being transformed in Manhattan from, warehouses into these George Jetson buildings. So I guess I give them awards for being modern and striking and exciting and 21st century, but at a definite price. Gwendolyn, do you have something you want to add?
No, you're doing
great. Am I talking
great.
Your ear off too much?
Not a bit. I'm listening.
Okay. I'm going to go on then. People said most interesting museums. Darlings, you know I take you to museums all the time. I try always to take you to quirky places and quirky things, handmade things, one-of-a-kind things, mom-and-pop things. But I also believe that a city and its people and a state and its people – a region and its people are their culture. Even if locals don't go to the museums, it's unimportant. A lot of people don't go to their own museums, and they're idiots. They're jackasses, and we know it. They're lazy intellectually. But it doesn't mean that their region hasn't invested money and energy and brains and calories in their version of culture, whether it's Native American culture and museums up in the prairie and the plain states, or in art museums with collections of Cubist sculpture and paintings and Impressionist paintings. Having said that, I would just like to say that what was the most interesting museum? The answer, all of them. All the museums are wonderful. Each museum had its own amazing thing, large or small, intimate or sprawling. They were all spectacular and fascinating in their different ways. And their foibles, their vanities, were just as interesting as their strengths, because what they thought they were good at showed what their city fathers and their history was trying to achieve and do successfully or unsuccessfully, as were their strengths. I think it's fascinating that down in St. Petersburg, Tampa area, there is a Salvador Dali museum devoted completely to Salvador Dali, and that was fascinating. And I also would like to say that if I had to pick another museum that would be absolutely amazing to go to, it would be the Albert Barnes Foundation. Albert Barnes was the doctor and medical scientist who invented Argerol, which, before we had penicillin and everything, Argerol was a drug that he and a partner invented to help combat gonorrhea and venereal diseases, especially if they were transmitted to newborn infants. He saved thousands and thousands and thousands of people's lives and their quality of life. He kept newborn infants from not only dying, not only losing their eyesight to gonorrhea, but then also losing their lives. They could die from having these venereal diseases passed on to them. And he was instrumental in doing that. He took his vast fortune of money that he made, and he invested it in art, and he built his own museum on his estate. And the story is much too involved to go into, so I'm not going to do that. But his entire collection, room by room, laid out exactly the way he thought that art should be displayed. He had no history in art. He had no degree or education in art. He simply followed his instincts and what he liked and what he learned from people that he hired to advise him. He laid out his own museum in the most eccentric way, combining the blacksmith's hinges and locks and tools and utensils hanging beside Impressionist paintings. It's the most interesting place to go and look at art in a non-traditional presentation. There's no museum like it. He did that, and it is a very, very interesting way of juxtaposing art and craft. Sophisticated, fine, millions of dollars worth of art beside a hinge that was made in Holland in 1715. You have to go there. And what they did was the city of Philadelphia acquired that through a whole process, acquired his entire collection, and then built a new museum, marble and glass and steel, in the middle of Philadelphia, right in Museum Square, right near all the other museums, but reconstructed his rooms room by room exactly as they existed in his house, but with better lighting. So you go in to a museum that looks like, you know, Denver's, you know, Institute of Art, but you walk in the front door and suddenly you're back in Barnes's home, and you are in each room laid out exactly the way they were, the same furnishings, the same furniture, everything, right? And then you have the catalogs explaining what the pieces are and what somewhat of what he was doing. There is no art historian in the United States who has not gone to the Barnes Institute. The part of their education as being an art historian, if you work at Sotheby's or Christie's, you're involved in their art programs, you have to have gone to the Barnes Museum to see an eccentric millionaire's version of what you do with art. So I think that's a fascinating thing. My most heartbreaking trip, North and South Carolina, shortly before Hurricane Michael. I was in both North and South Carolina, in Greenville and Greensboro, all those wonderful towns, Columbia, and beautiful, beautiful, each one of them fascinating. And a week later, Hurricane Michael hit and flooded them and damaged so much of what we had seen just the week before and what was so charming in the fall. That was very heartbreaking. I'm going to charming spots. I did that. I love this. Mummy, what do you consider in a world of bad manners? What do you consider the worst manners? Well, you probably all have guessed. Feet on the seat. I've seen people put their bare feet, their dirty feet, their snow boots, their shoes that they've just walked through dog poop on the sidewalk. I've seen them put them in Starbucks chairs. I've seen them in hotel lobbies. I've seen it in five-star hotels. I've seen it on bus seats and train seats. I've seen it in the airport. I can't conceive of it. And I think it's very interesting when you talk about manners around the world and etiquette. Each nation and each culture has its own worst manners. Did you know that in Arabic cultures, one of the most insulting things you can do is show the bottom of your foot to another person? And it indicates that they're under your foot. They're beneath your foot. So women are not allowed to cross their legs because you could see under their shoe. Men don't cross their legs or fold their legs. No one shows the bottom of their shoes. And you certainly would never put your feet on furniture in a public place. I don't know. I don't know where people come up with this. Maybe they do it in their own homes, in which case they're pigs. And if they don't do it in their own homes, then I consider them hypocrites and pigs. So there you go. And I also think pigs are very intelligent, probably would not put their feet in furniture if they were asked not to. So that's the other. The other thing I would say is that the biggest rudeness I've seen is people that don't say please and thank you to servants or to employees. And I find under-tipping and non-tipping to be, I think that kind of cheapness is as low as you can get. If you can't afford to buy a cup of coffee in a diner and tip for it, then you can't afford to buy the cup of coffee. You know, a cup of coffee, if you go to a diner for a dollar, you'd better have a quarter on you to tip. And, you know, and frankly, it should be a dollar on the dollar cup of coffee. If you can't afford to do that, then stay home. And you know what? Get a job. There you go. Go scrub a floor on your hands and knees and see how people treat you. This country is absolutely, you know, the center, the bullseye of poor manners and classicism. I find it, I've seen it in every hotel I've been in. People are just louts, even in five-star hotels. They treat serving people horribly. You know what? One of my things is that, and I've said this for 30 years, don't draft people in the military. At 18 years of age, before you get to go to college, you serve 1 year waiting tables in retail, preferably in food. And the second year of your Army service would be in working as a volunteer in a hospital emptying bedpans. I think if every child from the Bush family, that Jenna Bush idiot, the Koch brothers' children, Donald Trump's idiot son, whatever his problem is, you know, whether he's on the spectrum or not, I think if every child in this country at 18 knew that they were going to spend a year waiting tables – and then the following year, taking the food away. So you put the food in one end, and the second year you carry the food out, so to speak. At 20, you can go to college. I think that service, that military or public service, if you want to call it, would be very eye-opening for everyone. It would really educate everyone as to where we are in the world, who we are, and what the difference between rich and poor is, black and white, men and women, old and young, paraplegic and Olympic athlete. I think it would make everyone sort of sit back and say, oh, that's how the world works. Bring food to a table of a family of 10 people that are not going to leave you a tip, right? And have them treat you as if they're the Rockefellers and you're their butler. Do that for a whole year. I wonder what you would then do out in the world when you go to the diner or the four-star restaurant. And then the second year, empty bedpans. See people at their worst, at their most vulnerable, at their sickest, where they're resolving how to make sense of their lives as their lives are coming to an end, as they're graphically ill, as they're challenged horribly physically. Everyone should have to work in a hospital for a while, and that would settle everyone down. That humbles you right down, and it really puts your priorities in order, because you know what? Unless you die instantly in a car crash without knowing what happened, if you linger at all and in a hospital, you're going to go through that same experience of being a baby again, a baby in a soiled diaper, depending on someone with compassion and empathy who comes and cleans you and changes you. I think it would be so eye-opening for Jenna Bush, so eye-opening for Ivanka Trump, to have to deal with that kind of stuff. I can't push it hard enough on all of them. Yes.
I have to say that, I mean, even when I was going through college, through school, community service on that level of caring for the elderly, helping out in shelters, things like this, charities and such, not the waiter or waitress, which you make a good point about, excellent. But community service, especially among the bigger schools, those Ivy Leaguers and such, if you don't have that on your school record, you don't get service for enrollment. You really don't.
That's true.
You have to sidestep it some way, like handicapped or what have you, or father buys your way in or mother buys your way in. That happens.
Yes, I'm afraid that happens too much. But it would be nice to have this reinstituted where community service, those things on your resume before you get into a good college would be very good. But, you know, we now live in a Kardashian era. We live in an era where people don't care about that sort of thing. Everything is about, you know, the yellow diamond and the chinchilla coat and everything. So, but I think you're absolutely right. New Year's resolutions. I would like you people listening to like Facebook posts. And you know what? Screw me. I don't care if you like my posts or not. You don't even have to say you like them. You don't have to press one of the emojis. The emojis, by the way, are the emoticons. No, they're the emojis. The emojis are the little faces, the heart for the love, the winky thing, the thumbs up for like, the laugh out loud one, all of those. Those let you know that you've read the post and you've told the person that you read their post that you acknowledge it. I have this Facebook friend who lectured me on my post about that and said, well, there are posts that I read, but I don't necessarily like or agree with them, and I don't want to put like down. Blah, blah, blah. And I finally had to say, you know something, and I won't say his name. It's like, I so resent intellectuals in my life, people with very high IQs deliberately playing devil's advocate. I hate that. I hate when intelligent people use their intelligence to thwart the through line of a thought. No one needed you to split hairs on my post, okay? I know exactly what I'm saying, and you don't need to instruct me, because as intelligent as you are, you're nowhere near as intelligent as I am. So don't come on my page on Facebook and start instructing me on whether the thumbs up means you agree with the thing or whether you're letting me know you read it, blah, 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 blah. You're wasting my time. You're wasting your life. Bye-bye. Okay? My point is, if you read something on Facebook, let people know that you read it. Put a heart there because you love what they said, whatever. I put a heart down all the time for people who announce that they're going through a new round of chemo. Not because I think it's great or because I think it's funny. I put it there I use the heart to let them know that I care about them. And then I'll also post a comment too. But use the emojis to let people know that you're participating. I'm sick of these passive people that wander around and don't participate. It's like, and I especially despise the ones where you congratulate them on something or commiserate with them, where you say, I'm so sorry going through chemo. I hope that, you know, stay ferocious. This is what I'll say, stay ferocious, stay focused, and treat yourself to beautiful music and good friends and good company while you're going through this challenge. I especially think it's strange when you write things like that or congratulate them on the new litter of kittens or congratulate them on grandma's recipe for brownies coming out well, and they don't then post an emoji saying like or heart. You don't have to write back saying thank you for the congratulations. Just acknowledge it. But we live in an age when people barely can wipe their damn asses. That's really what we live in. Right? We live in an age when it's more important to be a Kardashian sitting in a bag full of poop as long as you've got a canary diamond on your finger and someone will come and wipe your ass for you. And that's the truth. That's the sad truth that we live in. We are the Rome of the 21st century. Okay? So I'm asking you that if you read something, and again, screw me, you know, I don't care if you have any regard for me, but if you read someone else's page and they say, I just got a new puppy. If you read it, press like. It takes one calorie to press like. If you're too lazy or stupid to press like to someone's announcement about, oh, I got a puppy, then you should blow your brains out. That's my loving advice to you. Okay? Blow your brains out. Okay, there's too many dust bunnies wandering around the earth right now. You're a dust bunny and should be swept up and gotten rid of. Okay, next thing. Oh, three words. Let's all agree on this. Thank you, please, and excuse me. Let's use those words, okay? Let's try that as New Year's resolution. Please, thank you, and excuse me. And of course, the hardest word in the English language to say, it's the hardest word for most people to pronounce, words, I'm sorry. Okay? If you've done something to hurt someone's feelings, say I'm sorry. Just jump on it. Don't linger around. Don't hesitate. Just try it. Say, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry I did that. And then elaborate. It's very freeing. It will make you feel very clean. And it will make that person look at you in a whole new way. Being able to say I'm sorry to someone is one of the best ways to let them know that you love them and that you love them enough to put your own ego aside and say, I'm sorry. I'm sorry I did that. Okay? Sybil, what are your resolutions? Oh, my resolutions are to suffer fools more gladly. I'm going to try and learn to be more patient in the face of grotesque stupidity. So I'm going to try and bite my lip a little bit more. And when I'm in the presence of an idiot, I'm going to hesitate before I say anything. Even smiling, I'm going to try not to do it. I'm going to try and be more patient when people like Giada De Laurentiis and Alex Trebek overpronounce every foreign name and word that they drop into a sentence. I'm so sick of hearing Alex Trebek say, wait a minute, I didn't see that. And that's Buenos Aires, Argentina. Yeah, but he's speaking normally, and then as soon as that comes up, it's like when is he going to start saying, instead of Paris, France, Paris, France? When is he going to start pronouncing that? Or Venezia, Italia? When is he going to do that? No, he says Venice, Italy. He says Paris, France. So this is just such affectation. Giada is ridiculous. I mean, she's talking normally, and then suddenly she says the word spaghetti, and to let us know that she's Italian, it's like, oh, my God. We don't need to know that you're Italian. You don't need to say, last night I had the most wonderful tomato sauce. You boil the water, and then you drop the in the water. Okay, you're an idiot, Giada. You're an idiot. Okay? You don't need to do that. But mommy has a New Year's resolution. When I sit with you and have lunch, Giada, I will try not to point at you and spit my food out laughing in your face because of your and Alex, you and your idiot, you know, Russian pronunciations and all of that, I will try not to laugh in your face. Okay? Recommended reading. There are so many books I could suggest that you read. My three this year, because I've read all of them, but I would read them again. A Brief History of Time by Stephen Hawking. Believe it or not, you will actually understand some of what Einstein, Newton, Galileo, and Hawking all were talking about by reading that book. It's the most incredible achievement that someone could take an IQ of 5,000 and turn it into a book that could almost be illustrated for children. It's like, oh my God, it's not just that he's a mega genius, but that he's so ingenious that he could help to explain some of that to ordinary people like me. I would give anything to be able to understand everything that Einstein and Hawking understood. And this was like, it was so interesting to have some of it actually lodge into me, so that I could begin to understand relativity and physics. Wonderful. Another book, Tale of Two Cities, is a classic. You want to cry, you want to laugh, read Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. It is as fresh and as wonderful and as complex today as it was when it was serialized back in the 1800s. And if you're in the theater and you're an actor or a writer, you should read Act One by Moss Hart. It is a brilliant book. It's actually a book that anyone should read. It's about someone finding their dream and trusting in it. So you don't have to be in the theater to do it. But if you – so read Act One by Moss Hart. But if you're in the theater and you have not read it, you're not really interested in being an actor or in the theater. So there you go. That's my blade on that. How are we running on time? Where are we on time?
We have 15 minutes, 16.
Okay, then that, good. Okay. So here we go. You say what you're saying.
14, sorry.
Okay, here we go. I'm going to read something to everyone. I'm going to read, many of you have asked me to read one of my stories. And you keep saying, well, when you do your podcast, why don't you read your stories? And I always say, well, I don't know. But since many of you will never read my stories because you won't go and see them, I'm going to read a story to you right now. And it's called A Hummingbird for Christmas, A Hummingbird at Christmas Time. And it's one of my longer stories. It's not super long. So, okay, I'll try and do this. I'll try and recite it as heartfelt. In as heartfelt a manner as I did when I wrote it. A Hummingbird at Christmas Time. No one was sure when or even where it came from. And once people were honest, it turned out that very few people had actually seen it with their own eyes. Witnesses, such as they were either braggarts in taverns, fish story fabulists on the docks, or mystics and fortune tellers on the carnival circuits. But there were a few folks whose reputations were beyond reproach, who could be relied on to be almost modest when asked about strange or miraculous happenings. None of the flashing, darting eyes, the too loud laughter, or wild gesticulating that often accompanies outlandish claims of the whimsical and given to notions among us. You know the type, don't you? Anyway, it was always near the winter solstice when the chill weather had really set in and the frost had settled on the last roses of the fall, when nature had begun its deep yearly sleep in the gardens, fields, and forests. It was then that the sightings would begin again. The great quiet after work would have settled on the land, and then, when one went walking home at dusk or in the silence of a gray Sunday morning through the woods, the only sound would be the muffled crunching of one's own footsteps through new-fallen snow on dry brush, and perhaps the occasional cheep of a hardy little sparrow or the rustle of a squirrel burrowing for its remembered stash of treats. It was in these still and somehow comforting times of solitude that some of the folks who reported what they had seen told of the vision. At first, it didn't seem possible. A flash in the corner of your eye, flitting just there to the left, or now in a branch? No, just to the right. And then there it would be, hovering for a moment, a precious moment or two, sparkling like silver lightning, broken glass, a lover's eyes, a shooting star, the full moon on rippling river water. Those were the words that the serious witnesses had used, the ones that others believed by the fireside when you could get them to tell, perhaps over that second cup of mulled wine, and they trusted your discretion and your friendship. It was definitely a bird, a hummingbird. No, not a bat, Uncle Henry. It hovered, no, floated, even more beautiful than a real hummingbird. And so the stories would be whispered within the lucky families who had a member who had actually witnessed the little creature. Not the louts who bragged about it in loud places and were more often than not believed anyway by their leering and mocking listeners. And lucky. Lucky was exactly the word that described the rare families who had been told of the true sightings by people like old Mrs. Grace Fairley, by wise Dr. Levi Carpenter, by Miss Helga Hibbard, the third grade teacher, by funny cousin Stefan, and by sweet Michael Moore, only 8 years old, but so wise beyond his years. They all told their loved ones their stories, and within a few days their households began to lift. A feeling of quiet joy began to spread inside even the humblest home. The simplest meal tasted more delicious than ever. Warm bread from the oven and melting butter became a feast out of a child's fable. Candlelight could fill an entire room, no brighter than before, and certainly not glaring, but full and golden in a new and loving glow. People found themselves humming while doing their most tedious chores, and realizing they were all humming, would begin to sing remembered family songs from the past, children and grandparents joining in together, laughing and amazed. At first, no one associated the sighting of the little hummingbird with the lovely change in the households. As a matter of fact, it was the neighbors of the witnesses' families who actually noticed. To be in the household was to just feel lovely, increasingly lovely, as if a weight long borne and resigned to was melting away, day by day, moment by moment. The oldest folks, bent from the wear and worries of life, began to straighten in their stance, rising ever more briskly from bed in the morning with none of the usual and expected grunts that old people do. Neighbors would finally comment to their friends saying how fresh and lively they would be looking, even as the thickening winter would weigh heavier on the world around them. The crisp night air, the glinting light on ice and snow, the whistling wind seemed to be refreshing and invigorating the witnesses and their families. How is it possible? Their cheeks glowed, their eyes twinkled. Even the oldest among them had complexions that looked like their own newborn great-grandchildren. Where they walked, they seemed surrounded by laughter and music. Their homes smelled of simple but hearty dinners, gravy and butter and roasted potatoes, freshly sliced oranges, punch made with apples, nutmeg, and cinnamon, pine needle garlands hanging from the eaves, and crisp cotton sheets and warm, cozy blankets. How lucky, how very, very lucky the witnesses were. And knowing them, being near them, and perhaps sharing a meal with them, or joining them for a cup of wine and some songs by the fire, spread the luck and the gladness. The witnesses were each made to tell their different little stories over and over again, where they had seen the hummingbird, what day and time of day. Was it early at dawn, or was it at dusk with the first star coming out? What was the weather like? Where in the woods? By the creek? Was it behind your house? What were they thinking when it happened? What were they feeling? Was there a voice? Was there a voice that told them to look? Each told the story that was theirs and theirs alone. And the listeners of the true stories sat very still, leaning a little forward, barely breathing, but at great peace. And their eyes, oh, the witnesses couldn't look away from their eyes, just as the listeners couldn't look away from theirs. and the only other sound in the room would be the merry little crackle from the fireplace, chuckling and glad, so very glad for their good fortune. That is about it for this show tonight. And I would like to just say a few thank yous as we wind up the show. I would like to thank my wonderful producer, Gwendolyn Holdenberry, for a season of this show as a new experiment. Gwendolyn, thank you very much. Go ahead.
It's been a ball. It'll be a bigger ball in 2019.
That's exactly right. And I would like to thank, again, Steve Buscher and Yuri Kushner. I'd like to thank them for all of their support. I'd like to thank all the people that donated money to the GoFundMe page that helped keep Sybil Brunson on her computer this year. That was a big help as my computer crashed while I was assembling stuff for the book that I'm still working on. It was wonderful for you folks to extend yourselves, and thank you for keeping Mummy on her her limping along MacBook Air. I'd like to thank all the listeners and all the people that write in all the time and send messages of support and hope. And I said it all in my thank you post. I will look forward to seeing all of you in the new year. I'd like to thank Jeffrey Wallach and Carl Smith, Michael Margulies, James Takus. I'd like to thank Lee Gannon, Gabrielle Stephen-Smith, and Little Sarah. I'd like to also thank Elaine, Jimmy Rassiopi, and I would like to thank Bob Gutowski, Jay Rogers, Tommy Stair, Jesse Galvez, Miss Yorushi, and of course my own Mr. Payamas. He knows who he is. Folks, thank you so much for a great season. I wish you all a happy new year. Have a great night. Good night, everybody.
From the Here Be Monsters Radio Network, thank you for listening, and thank you for listening to our Sunday show and all of our on-air ceremonies. We wish you a really steady, keep to it, good new year in 2019.
We deliver baseball caps, mitts, and everything you need for the game. But what you really get is so much more.
FedEx Delivery.
Game day spirit. What we deliver by delivering.